Do you need to raise your land and business to new heights? Then you need to call Evergreen Development and Construction. They do it all, from land development, construction, drainage, excavating, site prep, and even environmental projects. No job is too big for Evergreen Development and Construction. Give them a call at 813-478-8847. And don't forget to check out the late model Evergreen Development Construction Race Team. They'll be at a track near you. And remember, just think green. Evergreen Development and Construction. 813-478-8847.
The following is a presentation of Real Racin' USA.
Right now, we're trying to get a hold of Dickie himself because I tell you what, we got to set some time aside to talk to Dickie Anderson because he has been around racing probably since I was in diapers. I mean, you know, he.
How old are you?
Well, we can't help it 30? If you weren't potty trained till you
are
were
you 10.
Oh, dude, you had to ask, didn't you? I'm going to be 34 tomorrow.
Oh, 34. Perish the thought.
Well.
I had a midlife crisis at 30.
I'm 41. I remember going to races at 12, 11 and 12 years old and watching Dickie race against Fletcher. And even Jimmy Cope. You know, Jimmy Cope was racing when he was a kid. And they would race all the different series, but they'd always end up at Sunshine. And let me tell you, Jimmy Cope and Dave Fletcher used to crash their car. I think the promoters used to pay them extra to crash the car because things were different back then.
Yeah.
Things were a lot different back then. Yeah. You know, we always talk about, like, you know, you being at Charlotte with having problems with people and fighting and everything. I think back in the day, and Dickie can probably tell us that, you know, you had to fight a little bit to win the race.
Well, I tell you what, why don't you ask him? We have him on the line now. Go for it.
Dick Anderson, this is your old buddy Bonehead, Rob Elting, used to race with you on the road. You remember?
We must not have a good connection here.
That's what they all say when I ask them if they remember me.
Hi, Dickie. It's Carol. How are you, hon?
Hi, Carol. I can just barely hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll talk louder. How's that?
Okay.
Welcome to Inside Florida Racing.
Thank you very much.
You know, Dickie, this is Jason. It's really, I've never got the chance to speak to you, but I do have to say it's been an honor over the years sitting in grandstands watching you race. I mean, all over the place. I pretty much got out to DeSoto and Charlotte County being a kid and everything watching your race, and it was just a hoot seeing you show up and kick everybody's butt. It was a blast.
That's quite a compliment. Thank you.
Yeah, Dick, can you hear me now?
Barely. You're going to have to speak real loud.
Well, you know, what it is we've got a guy, Jack, here that's messing with all the buttons. He can't get the buttons worked out. This is Rob Elting, driver of the 27 late model, old Bonehead. Remember Bonehead?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you can't forget Bonehead. We used to have some good racing days back at Citrus.
And where you been?
Well, I'm back in it now. I'll be at the races at Charlotte County this weekend. I'll be running my late model in the super late model race. But I'm back in my car. I had to take a little hiatus with a divorce and some stuff like that, and had to pay for my car and my truck again. You know how that can be every now and then. But.
Oh God, do we have any tissues in this room? I think we have a whiner aboard.
But you know,
that's good news hearing that you're coming back.
Yeah, I'm back. I'm racing. I'm having a good time. I'm fixing to have a son in October, so I'm having a good time with that. I'm going through a midlife crisis, if you will, at 40, and still enjoying racing. And when they said you were going to be on tonight, I said, I'm going to come back and do some hosting of the show with them a little bit. You know, it's great to hear from you. I haven't talked to you since we raced at Citrus at one of them races not long ago. Tell the folks a little bit about the things that you're doing today. You know, we were talking a little bit about how you are a teacher. Everywhere you've gone, you've taught guys like me that you really didn't even know, but you met on the racetrack or at the racetrack. If we ask you questions and we're willing to listen, you were always a teacher. Tell me about some of the guys that you've taught along the way that have really become good racers.
Yeah. Well, I have some good mentors myself, and people like Ed Howe and a guy named Whip Mulligan, and they were so helpful in, you know, helping my career along and helping me win races. So it's only fair that I pass it on, you know. And right now I'm helping a lot of young kids coming up. Gosh, I just can't remember them all right off the top of my head, but To be honest, I enjoyed almost as much as racing, but, you know, I've still got the competitive juices flowing every now and then, so sometimes I want to win a little bit too bad, but other than that, I really enjoy what I'm doing, and everybody's always telling me, boy, I bet you wish you were in that thing, and no, I really don't, because I've got a 92 sitting here. If I wished I was in it, I would be in it, you know, but I thoroughly enjoy going racing with these kids and helping them as long as they listen, you know, and as long as they're, you know, giving it 100% wanting to learn. It's a real pleasure for me to have the opportunity to do that and make a living at it at the same time. So
what was your most successful student?
And but you never know, you know, stranger things have happened, but you know, if I get back in shape here, which I doubt will ever happen, but if I do, you might can see me sneak back in. But right now I'm really enjoying what I'm doing. I've helped I'm helping David Wilson this year and last year, and he's really come a long way in a short period of time. And I helped David Pullen the year before, and it just through the years I've helped dozens and dozens of young drivers, and it's been a pleasure to do it.
Well, you certainly did help your son, didn't you?
He didn't need a whole lot of help, but I feel like he's picked right up where I've left off. You know?
When did you start working with Wayne as a racer?
Wayne didn't start racing until he was 18.
Wow.
But he started helping me in the garage at 12, and he was my crew chief on the road at 14 when we were all pro racing. So at 14, the reason he didn't start till 18, I felt like he should learn what to do before he started racing, and I still believe in that. But by the time he started racing at 18, he didn't need much help. He already knew what to do.
Sounds like his boy's going there too.
Crew chief, and he's, you know, just as well. He's a fantastic racer now.
No doubt about that. And I guess his boy's going to follow in his footsteps.
You know, he picked up right where I left off. He's a man of speed when he pulls in the pits.
Oh yeah.
How's it feel, Dickie? How's it, I mean, you know, Wayne's following in your footsteps, and now Wayne's son, your grandson's going to be following in his footsteps. I mean, how does that make you feel? You know, I mean, you've started this generation of racing through your family.
Makes me feel old.
You are.
Because I look at...
Uh-oh, we didn't say that. Rob said it.
Like looking at Wayne, it seems like it was only 2 or 3 years ago I was looking at Wayne at that age, you know.
Yeah, it's got to be just, you know, it's got to bring a sparkle to your eyes. I mean, seeing your son and your grandson coming up through the ranks, and just taking off on you know, and just really kicking butt on just the tracks here in Florida and everywhere else.
Oh, it does. I'm very proud of Wayne, and like I say, he deserves most of the credit himself. He you know, not that I didn't help him, but all I had to do was get him started, and he took the ball and ran with it from there.
And boy, did he run!
Yeah.
You know, I got to see Wayne. I never got to see Wayne run until he started running the Craftsman Truck Series there for a little while, and then that kind of deal kind of fell through. And I've just in the past year or so, finally got to see him run the Super Lights and everything else. And there's, you know, it's almost kind of like watching you on the track race. I mean, he's taken a lot from what you've done over the years, and you know, put it towards what he does on the track too.
Oh, exactly. You know. I mean, I think he's the best driver in the state for sure, but, you know, I feel like he's got him beat when he pulls in if nothing happens. But I've got a good little driver in Jeff Chiquette driving my car whenever I have the chance. And then you've got Jeff Schofield, so you've got some really talented drivers in the state, but anytime Wayne's there, they're going to have their hands full.
Absolutely. Well, when you were racing and you showed up at the track, you were the one that was everybody was looking at and going, man, we got our hands full now. I mean, I can remember sitting at DeSoto and you rolling in with that 92, man, and you could tell it was you firing up. I mean, your car always had that distinct sound, and it was totally different than everybody else. I mean, just sitting in the stands, me and my dad would be like, man, that thing's a ground pounder. He's ready to go. And it was like every time you pulled on the track, it was like we knew you were the one to watch.
That was that Mopar power that he used to have back there. That's what made things different for Dick back then. I remember when I'd started racing back in probably 98, 99. Dick, you had all that Dodge power, man. You had it by the cojones, as I like to say.
What
back
joke,
in the Buddy Foster days.
Yeah, but you know, I raced for 40 years and I only ran Dodges for 3 of those 40. So, And to be honest, everybody thought it was the Dodge power, but it was really the handling of the cars. I didn't think the Dodge engines ran any better than the Chevrolets, and they were heavier. So
they sounded good, though.
Dodge engine really helped at all. If anything, I felt like it was a hindrance, but it made us awful proud to have the only Dodge out there and to do so well.
Yeah, and to do well with it, that was the thing, you know.
Could have fooled me.
Yeah, it was. You know, today when you see a Dodge car out there, he's got a Chevrolet motor in it, so at least you guys came out there with that Dodge and presented that Dodge motor out there and ran really well with it. So you were talking about maybe what's it going to take? What's it going to take for old Bonehead to get you back out here to race with me at Charlotte County Speedway?
You figure out a way for me to lose 30 or 40 pounds, and then I'll go back for you.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna talk to Jenny Craig, or I'm gonna talk to one of them. I'm gonna get you on the program. Maybe I'll go on it with you. We'll both lose 30.
Hey, Dickie, he ain't got no room to talk.
I could use to lose 30. I'm about 230, so I could use to be 200 would be fine.
One of the biggest reasons that I really quit racing when I had the opportunity, and it doesn't make me really want to rush back into it was. Every time I went to the racetrack, I was expected to win, and that puts so much pressure on you, it takes all of the fun out of it. If I went back to racing right now, I'm sure it'd take me a little while to get in the groove, but with everybody expecting you to win all the time, it takes all the fun out of it.
Well, Dick, isn't that true for some of these younger guys, too? Like Wayne, I'm sure, has experienced that, and don't you think maybe Jeff and some of these other guys, these young kids, they've experienced that, too?
I don't know. I know Wayne's got to the point to where he's won enough now to where now it's kind of on him. If he doesn't win, everybody's going, what happened? You know, he could go out and run the race of his life and run second. And instead of everybody patting him on the back, it's like, hey, what happened? You know, how come you didn't win? You know, and last 5 or 6 years I raced, I got so tired of that. You know, I'd go out and put out a heck of an effort, but it's like if I didn't win, it didn't count, you know.
Yeah, I tell you what, that's kind of humbling right there. You made me kind of look at it in a different light because when Wayne came down to Charlotte to race down here, I was in that mindset going, man, he's here, he's the one to beat, he's going to win, he's got the machine out there to do all the work, you know. And when he ended up the first time down here, I guess he had some motor problems, and the second time he ran out of time. And that kind of dawned on me that you just said that, and I can understand how that would take away from...
I'm even guilty of it. I'm so used to him winning now. This past weekend, you know, he went to Charlotte County. I called him Sunday, and he goes, well, I ran third. And I go, well, what happened?
You sound like my dad, man.
That irritated me, you know. People hey. Get used to you winning, and they don't realize, I mean, it really kind of hits a sore spot when they say that to you. You know, you think, damn, I started dead last, and... passed 20-some race cars and drove a great race. What does everybody say? Everybody says, what happened?
Well, no matter whether first, second, or third, when they mention the Anderson name, people come to watch.
Well, Dick, I was there that night. He came in third, but he was the show.
Yeah.
And anybody that was there
knows
he was the show. Other than having to scrape Rob off the wall a few times, he was the show.
I wasn't on the wall at all. I didn't get on the wall at all. And, Dick, you'll be proud. I got put to the rear twice for turning somebody around, but that's not good. But I finished seventh. I came back. And even Wayne told me afterwards that he had a hard time getting around me when I was running good at the beginning. But, you know, that's what's good about being a guy like Bonehead. See, it's easy for me just to go and have a good time. I don't have to be a winner. My dad gives me a hard time every race, no matter where I finish. He does that same thing. What happened?
Yeah. Yeah.
We have, as a matter of fact, one of your favorite boys there, Jeff Chiquette's going to be on tonight. And I understand he's going to be in the ASA race this weekend, too. Must be pretty proud of him.
I tell you what, I'm tickled to death with the deal I've got with my Black 92. Whenever we're not ASA racing or I'm not, I don't have a commitment, Jeff drives my Black 92, and it's just been a real good marriage. I mean, we've ran four times and set fast time all four times, and won three of them, ran second in the other one, and put one little scratch on the car. So I'm tickled to death with Jeff. I feel like other than my son, he's a perfect person to have in the car.
Hey, Dick, we're going to take a very short break here. We have to help take care of our sponsors. I'll tell you what, if you got maybe want to grab a quick smoke or a cold one or whatever, we'll be back in about a minute and a half. We want to come back and talk to you about get your opinions and your ideas on how things are going in the world of racing, and just get your opinions on how things go these days. How's that?
No problem.
All right, we'll be right
back.
See
you in a bit.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll be right back. Hang on, guys. Here, let me do
this. Go ahead. Press your buttons. This is Short Track. This is Inside Florida Racing.
Do you not know where you are?
No, I don't know where I'm at tonight. Oh, my God.
Do you need to raise your land and business to new heights? Then you need to call Evergreen Development and Construction. They do it all, from land development, construction, drainage, excavating, site prep, and even environmental projects. No job is too big for Evergreen Development and Construction. Give them a call at 813-478-8847. And don't forget to check out the late model Evergreen Development Construction race team. They'll be at a track near you. And remember, just think green. Evergreen Development and Construction. 813-478-8847.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper Upper.
Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper Upper.
Truly the long arm of the law at the movie theater. You and a velvet rope are all that keep the huddled masses from a free flick.
You're the man now.
Ever vigilant, you boldly demand to see our stub. Getting a little personal, don't you think?
Can I see your stub?
Who's the guy in the military-style uniform that would make any third-world dictator proud? Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper Upper, that's who.
Salute the general.
So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, Stubmaster, because you really tear it up.
Mr. Movie Theater Ticket Ripper.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis.
The best Super Late Model drivers in the state square off for the Guaranteed Concrete Florida Triple Crown Race Number 2, the 9th Annual Florida State Late Model Championship 200 at USA International Speedway. Who will wear the championship ring provided by Midas Jewelers? Be there Saturday night, August 4th at USA International Speedway. Tickets are on sale now. Call the Speedway at 1-800-984-7223. USA International Speedway. As you thought, your weekends go fast.
Good Monday evening to you. It's Inside Florida Racing. I am Racing Jason Beckner. Right to my left, the very beautiful Miss Carol Wicks. And to my right, the very boneheadedness, Rob Bonehead.
The very beautiful bonehead.
That is.
But more importantly, disrespect. Blatant disrespect.
Live on the line where this is Mr. Dick Anderson.
Yeah, right. we don't want to be wasting his time with your mouth now. Quiet down, boys.
That's hey, okay. Dickie, I got plenty of time.
Question, Mr. Anderson.
Uh-huh.
How do you feel about the young kids coming up in racing today? I'm talking about like 12-year-olds in super late model cars and more often than not, money talks and you know what walks.
Well, I've got mixed emotions, really. I love to see these young kids have something like that to get involved in. And anymore, I just can't believe your top class of cars, like super late models or whatever, they're just getting younger and younger and younger. But down the negative part I see is that they're getting so young that they don't understand anything about the race car, you know, and that they don't work on the race cars themselves and all. So it's, like I say, I have mixed emotions. I think it's great that they can do it at that young of an age. It gives them such a good shot to move on up. But at the same time, it's becoming such a money sport. When I was doing most of my racing, you did all the work on your own car and you couldn't just go and buy speed. Nowadays, you can just go and buy speed, and there's nothing wrong with that because if one person's doing it, you got to do it, you know. So, but the only negative part I have to it is you know, the kids get up and become seasoned race car drivers, and yet they don't know how to work on their own car. So if they run out of money, then they're really in trouble, you know.
You know, lately racing, short track racing itself has been getting kind of kicked to the wayside with the bigger side of racing. You got your NASCAR, your Indy, and stuff like that. You know, it seems like maybe we're starting to get on that uphill climb again, where the fans are starting to come back to the short track side of it. Over the years, I mean, you've been doing the short track racing thing for years. What has been the biggest change, the negative change to short track racing, do you think that's really made everything go downhill with it?
Well, everything's become such a, in other words, how can I say it? NASCAR just pulls all the strings. The racer has no say-so in anything anymore. They're trying to make all the cars identical. You're not allowed to say what you want to say. All, you know, it's like a bunch of robots out there, and everything's just programmed. You might as well go watch wrestling, you know. And I think that's the reason some people are coming back to short track racing. They're getting a little sick of it.
You know? Nasty car.
But let me say something.
I'm not a big NASCAR fan. Trust me, you know.
Dick, let me say something. This is Rob again. Now, from what you just said, okay, about NASCAR having the car, having a certain car, certain body, certain motor, you got to run and all that. This brings me to my issue of today. Coming back into late model racing, something that I have a big issue with is Progressive Racing engines and ABC bodies being like the number one thing that's on certain promoters' minds when it comes to promoting late model races today. Now, the Progressive Super Late Model motor that they have of today, to me, is the same thing as the high compression motor that they used to make run a 390 or a two barrel on. But my flat top that I got to run today is still running against those guys with the same carburetor on them today. Now, you know the rules that are going on here. What do you think about the motor rules of today in super late model? I'm not even talking about limiteds. I'm talking about in supers.
Yeah. Well, I think, and I'm not saying it because I have one, I think this new spec engine has helped tremendously. It's got the same horsepower as your $30,000 engine that costs $15,000. It's cut the engine bill in half. And I've been running one now for over 6 months without the first problem. So I think that's a good thing in the right direction. I think getting all the cars with the same body, that's in the right direction. I used to run all the tracks all over the state. And every time I wanted to go to another track, I'd have to change the spoiler. I'd have to change the weight. I'd have to change the carburetor. And at least we're getting universal rules, which I think are helping everybody. I haven't personally raced down at Punta Gorda, but from everything I hear, I have to commend them, because you could take any car you have, any motor you have, and you could go down there and fit in. That's really something that's been needing to be done at all the tracks for years.
Well, that's,
and
that's
I understand the way they got it. It's pretty darn fair, you know.
That's so anybody can race. I mean, that was the whole thing behind that.
Everybody
can race.
Is bragging about it, you know. I haven't talked to one person that was unhappy.
You know, I'm kind of biased because, you know, I'm the announcer there, but I'm a fan before anything else.
Yeah.
And I was very skeptical whenever they said they're going to bring different, they're going to bring limiteds, they're going to bring lates, they're going to bring supers, they're going to bring ASAs, they're going to bring them all in here and let them run together. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting here going, man, the ASAs and the supers are just going to run away with this thing.
Yeah.
And they have it.
The reason they get away with it, you know, like I said, I gave the pluses, but let me give the minuses now. That only works at your small racetracks like Punta Gorda, Ocala, Inverness. If you would go to New Smyrna with those rules, then you would see certain classes having an advantage.
You're only going to go so fast.
Punta Gorda, Ocala, Inverness, you can only use so much horsepower. Having a big $35,000 motor would probably hurt you more than it would help you. So, you know, these quarter-mile and third-mile tracks, you can institute rules like that, and it's just the best thing in the world.
Where is your take on you've been obviously following the ASA late model series pretty closely because you work with David Wilson in that series. What's your take on the crate motor deal with all that?
There again, I've got mixed emotions. It's I'm not in favor of the high-dollar motors because I could never afford one back when I was racing, so trust me, I'm dead against those. The crate motor is definitely going in the right direction, but it's going just a little bit too far in the other direction. You need to hit somewhere in the middle there, you know, and that's why I like the spec motor so well, you know. I think the crate motor, by the time you get done, you've spent $7,000 or $8,000. the high dollar motor, you spent $30,000. The spec engine with about 605 horsepower, you spent $15,000. I feel like that lands you in a good spot because you can go to Lakeland with that. You can go to New Smyrna with that. You know, you can go anywhere in the state and run good. The crate motor, it works out good at the small racetracks, you know. You start going to New Smyrna on these big tracks, and it gets just a little bit on the boring side because it's so hard to pass. Everybody's going the same speed down a straightaway, and it's you know, pretty hard. You know, I think you have a few engine problems when you get them on the bigger tracks, but it's definitely a step in the right direction. I just feel like it was stepping back a hair too far. If you get away from a third or a quarter mile track, then I think the racing gets just a little on the boring side.
Dick, what I was going to say is I still think that, and it's because I'm cheap. I've always been a guy that hasn't had the money to really race. Okay, I mean, and that's a fact. I mean, I had a car. And motor and trailer and everything where some guys pulled out toolboxes that cost more than my car. So what I was going to say is $15,000 is still a lot of money in today's time to pay for a motor. What they're trying to do is get these, you know, late model classes to where we've got full fields of cars all the time with a motor that costs less than that. And I'm going to say it, and everybody's going to laugh anyways,
yes, but
and
you'll
I don't
go
care.
Through two crate motors to three crate motors in the time you'll go through one of the other motors, so now do the math.
You're right there with the crate motors. I don't necessarily like the crate motors. What I was going to say is my flat top motor that I have, I'll be lucky if I have $12,000 in the whole thing, all of it.
Oh, wait, I have a question.
So my flat top, okay, with a steel head, is it cost me less money. I only got 580 horsepower. Okay, now, at Charlotte, I don't care, Dick, you know that. That's 600 horsepower. They're never going to hook that up at Charlotte. I've already proven to everybody out there that no matter what late model you bring out there, I don't think, and you'll probably agree, that anybody's going to run no 1490s there with a super coming this weekend. They might, but I think only in the old days of the track could you run those kind of times at that track. So it's just like what you said at the small racetrack. Doesn't matter if you have a crate motor. Doesn't matter if you have a spec motor. Doesn't matter if you have a limited on a two-barrel.
Well, you're just repeating what I said.
That's it.
Dick, did I hear you right that the crate late model motors, those motors they're running, that you'll buy more of those because they don't hold up? Is that what
I
heard?
They're a wet sump engine. You know, you'll go through a couple of those in the course of a year.
I gotcha.
And there's guys that are cheating with those motors today. That's another issue with those.
You're kidding.
And that's an issue.
Basically stock rods and all. It's like pay me now or pay me later, you know.
it'd be nice if they...
I'm all for the people who can't afford a high-dollar motor. I can't afford one either. I wouldn't even have a race car right now if I had to have a high-dollar motor.
Yeah, a high-dollar motor.
Motor lands you in between, and you can go anywhere and race.
Okay, so...
That's true.
With the crate motor right now, that runs fine at Ocala or Punta Gorda. If you decide one weekend you wanted to go to New Smyrna to a big race or Lakeland and all, you can't do it.
It won't work, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, Dick, if you could get all the promoters in a room here in Florida,
yeah,
and put them all and sit down and they listen to the Dick Anderson.
We'd probably have to restrain him a little bit.
We have the rules very close to what Punta Gorda's got.
If we put them all together, what do you think, and I'm just joking, of course, but what do you think of, you know, NASCAR, we got all these kids racing. They got these dreams, like Hollywood dreams, of going to NASCAR and becoming big stars or whatever and spending all this money. And like you said right at the beginning, a lot of them don't work on the cars and all that. It doesn't seem to me that bodes as good a future for the sport. I mean, how do we do this so that the guys can make this a little more affordable? Not that, you know, everybody wants to make money. Obviously, that may not be possible.
Well,
but
going to show none. There's nobody, let's face it, there ain't nobody racing for the money, you know?
Yeah. So how can we make this more affordable for these guys?
The ASA deal is probably the best deal that's come along, especially for these young kids. And it's affordable, and it's kind of like a stepping stone. If a kid goes in and runs real good in ASA for a year or two, it's real easy for him to take the step into Hooters Pro Cup. Then from the Hooters Pro Cup, you can step into the Busch. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
So the ASA right now is kind of like a savior for for a division to get these kids started.
We got some good kids up there in ASA.
So then, would it help? Would it help if the tracks? Is it all about the motors? Would it help if the, is that what it's about, or is there more to it than that?
Well, no, I don't really understand your question.
What he's saying is he's not understanding. I think between the crate motor can't turn a lot of RPM.
You've got a Punta Gorda are absolutely beautiful for the whole state as far as I'm concerned. But now if you're talking about a division to for these guys with the want to be in the Daytona 500 in 10 years, then we've got the ASA that just started the last couple of years. It's beautiful for that.
Yeah, I think the ASA series has been a great series, like you said, for upcoming racers and for a budget, you know, because you think of what ASA racing costs, what it used to cost as ASA racing and what it costs today. It's definitely a better stepping stone, I think, getting
They've
into the Hooters.
They've had 40-some cars at every race. I would say that speaks for itself.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's what I was trying to say is that if we, even though $15,000 seems like a lot of money to me for a spec motor, if we could get that price for a motor down even more in a super late model that was more affordable for everybody, I think that we would see more cars. And my point,
you can get it down any more than that without having motors that are going to blow up as soon as you go to a good racetrack.
Yep.
Well, I don't know.
Are you saying you're back to the thing? If you'll be fine at Charlotte or Auburndale or somewhere, and you go to
Auburndale, at Charlotte, at Ocala, at Inverness. But if you want to start stepping up to bigger racetracks and get more attention, then you're going to have to step up to a little bit better motor.
Yeah.
Well, I think if they would, another thing too, Dick, is that I don't have a problem with a spec motor if I know what's in it, if I can build one myself. If they're going to have a spec motor and say, okay, these are the rods and these are the crank. Well, what if you're your own motor builder? What if you were the guy that built your own flat top motor back in the day? Well, they won't even tell me what's in this motor, so I can go build my own spec motor. And what really gets aggravating as a racer that races against a guy that has a progressive motor is he comes through and he's got a progressive valve cover on there and they just ride him right on through and they don't check anything. But yet I come through and they want to tear my motor apart because it's got steel heads on it and it's a flat top. But that's the only thing that kind of aggravates me. I don't mind a spec motor if I can build my own spec motor. Tell me what the specs are and let me build my own motor. That was the only qualm I had with it. Besides that, yes, it is.
Well, it's then everybody's going to be building them there again. You're going to have to get back into tearing it down and all.
Well, that's fine, but I don't know what's inside that progressive motor.
Well, they got seals on them, and if you want to look at one, imagine you can, you know.
Okay.
Well, we know a lot about Dickie Anderson, the racer, and the father, and all those things. How about a little bit about Dickie?
One of those spec motors. I mean, you know,
he's still on the spec motor.
You still on the spec?
She wants. She wants to change gears.
She shifted your transmission on you, Dick.
She wants to talk about family, and I just want to talk about motors.
Well, the fans would like to know a little about Dickie Anderson, the man.
Yeah. Well, on the motor deal, let me sum it up saying this. From the day I started racing.
You're a motorhead.
I know that guy's getting away with something in his motor. Oh, this guy's getting away. If you're racing down at Punta Gorda, as long as you're not at New Smyrna or Lakeland, you're kind of blowing in the wind.
Yeah.
It's a relative.
Yeah, you're right.
And you're just getting nitpicky to where that's been going on forever. You're always going to think somebody else is running something that you're not. But if you go to... Like, if I go to Punta Gorda racing, I could care less what motor anybody's got.
Yeah.
It's irrelevant.
I agree. I agree with you there at the small tracks. There's no doubt. It doesn't matter to me here. But if I wanted to go race at Lakeland and go have a good time, that's all it's going to be is just having a good time because there's not going to be anybody in the top 10.
Dickie, can I quote you on that?
On what?
About you don't care what motor anybody's running at Charlotte?
It doesn't matter.
No, it really does not matter.
It doesn't matter.
I'll go
or
put
Ocala or Inverness.
I agree.
That's awesome.
And he's good at Inverness, too.
Trust me, I know.
Yeah, he's good at Inverness.
The most motors I ever had, I probably won the most races with there.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree.
You know?
You going to be down there at Punta Gorda watching your son this weekend?
I'll go down with Wayne this weekend,
All right,
awesome.
Good.
Cool. Yeah.
Okay, so tell me what you do during your spare time.
Oh, there is no spare time.
There is no spare time. You're a true motorhead, right?
There's no such thing as spare time.
No fishing,
I work daily.
No...
I work daily on race cars, and I maintain them for people, and that's how I make my living. But right now, I'm pretty much full-time with David Wilson, maintaining his cars and racing with him and having a pretty good time doing it.
David's got a lot of promise.
Yeah, he's, you know, I'm really happy where I'm at right now.
Dickie, I mean, you've been in the short track scene forever and a day. Tell everybody, when did you start getting into racing? How old were you? And where'd you start racing at?
I was driving in Hialeah Speedway when I was 15 years old, and I think that was 1963.
Well, I told you I wasn't even born yet when he started.
I wasn't even a twinkle in somebody's eye.
That's all right, Dickie. I was here.
Oh, goodness.
Was that track still flat then when they first opened it as it was when they closed it?
It's always been the same, yep.
Yeah.
Hey, did you ever get a chance to run on any dirt at all?
Oh, yeah, I've ran dirt. Uh-huh.
That was kind of one of the, that's kind of a big thing with me because I got caught going to a dirt track this weekend. But I've always liked dirt track racing. I love watching ARCA cars.
Yeah.
You know, they do those couple races a year. They go run dirt track. Do you see anywhere in short track racing on a Saturday night level for dirt track cars and asphalt cars to get together and run a series when they're running both asphalt and dirt tracks together?
Gosh, I really don't. It's just two different worlds. I really don't see that ever happening.
Do you see a lot of kids needing to get a lot more dirt track experience, or is it okay just to go ahead and stick them on the asphalt?
I've got mixed emotions there, you know. I think asphalt drivers make better dirt drivers than dirt drivers do asphalt drivers.
Because the dirt's changed.
And I can prove my point. You look back in the 60s and 70s and 80s at all the people that left Tampa, where you're at there, and went up north and made it big as dirt track stars, you know.
Right.
You just go on and on with the list, you know, from people that left Florida, which Florida was all asphalt. They went up north in the 60s and 70s and made big names for themselves, you know. Will Cagle, Buzzy Rudiman, Jackie Evans, you know, you can just go on and on and on, you know. All the people that went up there and became big, big stars, and they didn't run dirt down here.
We got a couple super late model drivers down here that are going dirt up at Volusia, Rich Pratt and...
Right. And they're doing good.
Yeah, Patrick Williams, they're having a ball.
And they're doing great, my point is.
They are, they're winning.
Hey, Dick, you remember when they used to run the road courses in the late model series?
Oh, yes, I remember very well.
Now, I personally would love to see that come back in some kind of series.
We used to do two a year.
Yeah, I know, and right when I started.
That was so much fun to just have that. I wouldn't want to do probably any more than two or three a year.
Now, that would be great.
To have all the guys go and do a little something different like that, see the camaraderie and all. It was like everybody was buddies on the road course weekend, you know?
Yeah, I bet it was a blast.
And it was just so much fun for everybody to go and do something different like that. I really, really miss that.
So, see, that's a good promotion
to
do. So,
let's put something together,
Dickie.
Oh, it was
called down at Sebring. I think you
it
blew up
Sebring. That's
you blew up a motor down at Sebring, didn't you?
I've ran really, really extremely well every one we ever had.
I think the last
and
one they
I had
did.
A couple flats and a blue motor and one, but I was extremely fast every one I ever went to.
Yeah.
I remember they quit doing them when I started in the Florida Pro Series, like a couple years prior to that, they had stopped, and it was back in 98 or something. So I would like to see that come back. And maybe I'll have to talk to Bobby Deal, because Bobby Deal was a big road racer. And maybe talk to him about if there's anybody that can make it happen. It'd be him.
Just as much as me.
Dick, what is the most fun? What are some of the most fun times when you're just sitting around with your buddies, thinking about stuff you've done in the past? What is the most fun that you think you've had out there on the racing circuit?
Probably had the most fun the first 5 years of racing when everything wasn't so serious. You know, you had a few hundred bucks in your car and you worked your butt off on it, towed it with the track with a chain, and everything wasn't so serious. You know. And nowadays, everything's so expensive, that makes it serious, you know? So I actually had a whole lot more fun when I was in the lower divisions racing than when I got in the top division.
Would you have anything to say for a lot of, you know, we're talking about the kids with money coming into it and not knowing, you know, not working on the cars. Would you have anything to say, any words of wisdom for the kids that are out there that have been working on the cars, that have been running your Saturday Night Bomber series, that have been working their ways up into the mini stocks, up into a limited late sportsman, stuff like that? What would be the, you know, what would be the way for them to go?
As far as, you know, I'm prejudiced. I came up through that way. I mean, I pumped gas in a gas station most of my life, you know, when I started racing, and And I believe that's the way you should do it. Your talent comes up at a natural level, and also you learn what to do and what to appreciate. And nowadays, they darn near start off in super late models, and they don't appreciate what they have, you know?
Amen.
If most of these drivers had to work harder to get what they've got, they would appreciate it a whole lot more, you know? But like I say, don't get me wrong, I wish I was a young driver, you know, and didn't have to come through the ranks and didn't have to work hard.
I think a lot of
I would be just as bad. I would be just as bad at as far as that side of it as they are.
But, Dick, Dick,
the guy that comes through the bomber ranks and everything like that, when he does get to a higher level, he's going to appreciate it a whole lot more, and he's probably going to do it awful well.
Awesome.
When you're working with these youngsters, what is the hardest thing that you have? Like, what's the toughest aspect of what you're trying to teach them to get across to the kid?
The hard aspect is they're new at it, and when they come in off the racetrack, they can't tell you what the car's doing, how to adjust on the car, and rightly so. If I only had a year or two of experience, I wouldn't be able to tell you either. You understand what I'm saying?
Yep.
But that's the hardest aspect for me, is to try to tune the car, and I have to do it mostly just by sight. And a lot of times some things will look like they're doing something that they're not, you know. So it's really, really hard to try to work with a driver that hasn't been around for a while, because, you know, like I say, they're trying to learn, and they just really don't know what to tell you.
Don't you think a lot of the kids are living their father's dreams?
What's that again?
Do you think that it's a lot of the kids are living their father's dreams?
Oh, yes.
There's no doubt. I've seen some of them
that look like they hate life.
I think a lot of the drivers like it a whole lot more than the kids do, you know?
Yeah, well, it was one thing I noticed.
You know, I'm the same way.
Thing I noticed about some of the kids that are coming up is they don't even know what a tire stagger tape is.
And like I say, that really bothers me, but probably because I came from the other side of the tracks. You know, I had to learn it all in order to do it, and I would really like to see see them have to learn it, because it would make them a much, much better driver. The boy I'm helping now, his dad has him coming up to the shop 2 days a week to work on the car, and I think that's just an excellent idea. I think that was a really, really move on the right side, because the more they have to work on it, the more they'll see how much work it takes to put it back together when they tear it up, and plus they'll start learning what makes the race car tick, and it'll make them a whole lot better driver. So I'm really happy that Mr. Wilson made that move with David, because it's going to make him a better driver.
And they're excellent people, great people to be around with. I'm sure
the best people I've ever worked for. I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, great people. And you guys are all getting all packed up and ready to go to Birmingham.
Well, we decided that we wanted to go to Bristol more than Birmingham, and it was so close together, it was almost impossible to do both. So we're going to skip Birmingham and go to Bristol. Like I told them, for someone that's never been to Bristol, it's quite an experience.
Oh, that's cool. Now, are you going then the following week to Orange County?
Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
But I guess we're going to take two cars to Bristol, and Scott Walters is going to drive one, and David Wilson's going to drive the other.
Huh. All right. That's pretty cool.
Uh-huh.
That's pretty cool.
Well, once again, Dickie,
they'll thoroughly enjoy that trip.
Once again, Dickie, you're going to be coming down here to...
more than a trip.
Dickie, you're going to be coming down here with Wayne this weekend to the Charlotte County Motorsports Park, right?
Right now, I don't have anything to do, and unless something pops up, I'm thinking about maybe coming down there with him.
Well, I tell you what, I really do hope you come, because I'd love to meet you again and shake your hand and get your autograph, because growing up, you've been one of my short track heroes, sir.
Well, that's quite a compliment coming from you guys.
Yeah, I'm going to come find you, Dick. I'm going to come find you. I might need a little help myself.
I love to BS and tell a lot of lies, you know.
Dickie, it's time for us to take a break here, and I'd like to thank you so much for coming on the show. You're always a delight to talk to about racing, because you know racing better than most people.
My pleasure, and I loved hearing from Bonehead, too. I'm glad to see you back.
That's right. You come see me. I'll be racing this weekend, and always remember, you're the king, Dick.
All right, buddy.
I'll see you next Saturday. Take care, and thank you so much again.
Thank you, Dickie.
Thanks, Dick.
Night, Dickie.
Man, that was cool.
He was a cool cat.